Okay, I'm gonna lean forward now. Sit up in my chair.
Get your big boy podcast pants on.
My big boy microphone. No, that doesn't sound right.
No.
Okay.
Try something else. Try something else. Big boy.
My big boy headphones on.
Yeah.
That's good enough.
Anything else? Yeah. No. Anything else?
No. Hello and welcome to episode 222 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me, as always, is
Adam. Do you have any great like 222 references this week?
I thought about it just by accident. The only one I can think of is the pizza one.
Oh yeah, yeah. What company is that?
Pizza 222.
Is there such a thing?
Well, this might have happened while you were growing up in Ontario or Montreal. Where did you grow up? Ontario, right?
Yeah, just north of Toronto.
Right. No, this was a thing. This was a revolutionary thing back when I was a kid, when I was probably like 12 years old, as the pizza company came out, like, cuz then there was no pizza chains. And so this one came out called Pizza 222. Their phone number was 222-2222.
Right.
Which that was unheard of. Like, nobody had a 222 number. Like, they had to go and do some serious technology to change over the trunks or the lines or something. And I know this because my dad worked for the phone company.
Wow.
And so that
cutting edge.
Yeah, I don't remember giving a care when I was a kid. But I remember my dad telling us all about it, why this was a big deal, that this pizza company had revolutionized some sort of telephony.
Great. The pizza was awful, though.
Oh, yeah. We never had it. But, yeah, it's the story now is almost as interesting as it was back then.
Right.
In the 80s. So there you go. That's all I can think of for two. Unless you want to do the TV show again this week.
Right, yeah. We'll work our way up to 227.
There you got it.
All right, at 227, though, like, we're playing the theme song.
Yeah. We're going to have most of the cast on the show.
That's what I was hoping.
Yeah. That one girl, she works at the donor shop down here, down the street. Odd reference.
There was a lady on that show, just one more 227 mm-hmm. thing, that had one of those names like Madonna, just a first name. Do you remember what it was?
I do.
You do?
Ish.
Okay, what do you think it was? I can't remember.
I think it was Jackie.
Yeah, or Jack A.
Jack A. With an accent on it, I'm sure. I'm sure it's accent grave.
Yeah. No, it would be accent aigu.
Aigu. Well, you're the one that grew up north of Toronto.
That's right.
I'm on the West Coast. Yeah, that's
Amazon.
Amazon. No, I got some more pizza 222 stuff to talk about. And 227. That's one of those shows that was on because they just had nothing else going.
And I think they ran it right after the Cosby Show, right?
Did they?
I'm pretty sure.
No, there's no way.
They did.
No.
No?
Up until this point, I really didn't care for this line of conversation. But now it's on. There's no way it did.
I think it did.
No, Family Ties did.
Really?
Oh, come on. This was your must-see Thursday.
Oh, I for some reason, I remember 227 being at... we'll have to go back and check the TV guide. Do you still have one?
Yeah. I got a whole stack of them. I got them from George's dad. Amazon, that's what's going on. Buy your TV guides through Amazon, through our site. Helps us out.
Great.
And you get to see what's on.
Yeah. From 1986.
Night Court. That was on after the Cosby Show.
I love that show.
Yeah. I'm going to say Cosby Show, Family Ties, Cheers, Night Court. That was your block.
Really?
And then that French show, La Law, was on after.
Right, right.
What's going on besides get that out of there? What's going on today?
Not sure, but I do have a photography related.
Well, hang on. Before we get
something
to that.
Bring up, this yeah, is yeah, no, yeah, but this fine. is photography. This isn't a photography yes. podcast.
Before we get to that, there's some.
Oh,
there's
before some, we get to the photography.
Yeah, I just want to point out that Adam's not leaving the show.
Oh, was that a big controversy?
It was a tempest in a teacup. Yeah.
Okay.
That was our attempt at an April Fool's joke.
Right.
And I use the word joke loosely.
Right.
It was an April Fool's incident.
Right. I never saw anything about it on Facebook. Was it just on the website?
No, there was a little bit.
Though, did you post it though? Like, did
no,
you, post
you can't.
The...
You can't accidentally leak it on Facebook too.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how things get accidentally leaked. I should have asked like one of the Kardashians. Hey, how do you leak something accidentally nowadays? Right. That's what I need right. to know. Yeah. And so the whole point was to sort of leak it accidentally, not explain it. And then we did get some listener feedback that it was confusing.
Right.
Yeah. So there we go. It was an April Fool's confusion.
Did anybody make it through the episode and learn anything?
No one mentioned it. No one admitted to getting through the episode. If they did.
Okay.
So, but Steve was a good sport because I called him at the last minute. Like really, we recorded that like a few minutes before April Fool's.
Right.
Yeah. And so he was game.
Good for him.
Yeah. So there you go. So let's. I want to hear your. Now that you're staying on the show, now you're staying with us. Okay. What is your? Oh, for the note on that joke. Originally the joke was going to be on you.
Oh.
I was going to leak it, and then first of all, you'd never even hear it anyway, and not know what was going on.
No, I see. The problem is, I'd have to pay more attention for
exactly.
it to work.
But also,
so you kind of realize that joke was never going to work.
No.
Unless someone emailed me, you would have had to get a listener to email me saying, "Are you leaving the show? Check out this clip."
It would and have even to then, your response way. Would have been, "Huh?
I'll get to it."
Yeah, whatever. I don't know. We'll talk about it on this, next week's
this
show.
Does this mean I don't have to get up anymore to do this?
Right. So originally it was going to be on you, and then I decided, man, I can't do that to you. I can't punk you like that.
Right, right.
I want to do better, like, I don't know, whatever they do on the punk show. That's what I'm doing for when we get you. It'll be good like okay. that.
Okay.
Whatever Kutcher's doing now. Okay, let's hear your photo-related stuff.
Okay, well, a colleague of mine at work the other day asked me, said, "Oh, yeah, you're Adam, you're into cameras, right? I want to get a new camera. I just want a point and shoot. What should I buy?" So this kind of loaded question is this. Have you been hit with this question lately?
No.
Okay, so I said, "Well,
I mean,
I don't
yes,
know.
Yes, I have, and let's hear your side of it."
Well, my response was, "Well, I don't know much about point and shoot cameras. How much do you want to spend?" So that first question was obviously about, well, what's our price point here? And he said, "Oh, well, you know, maybe around $300." I said, "Okay, great.
Four of them, then.
You know, give me you know a day or so to just look at what's out there, and then I'll give you some suggestions." So, so I started just for interest's sake and for his sake because I thought I might be able to offer some guidance. Started looking at you know what you would get for $300 in the point and shoot market. Turns out there's a lot of pretty cool stuff going on in point shoots. I mean, this definitely made me think, well, maybe I should have one of these, like these crazy compact super zooms that, you know, Canon, Nikon, Panasonic, they're all kind of in the game. Sony are making these, you know, for about $300, these cameras that have, you know, zoom ranges on them from 25 you know, equivalent of 25 to 750 millimeters, sometimes more, with built-in image stabilization and ISOs that are pretty good up to about 3200, like just crazy specs, like, you know, every kind of video resolution and frame rate that you could imagine. And like, you know, the, you know, all, how all these like camera labs test everything out. And, you know, they all seem to say this, that, that the stuff is pretty darn awesome. So for $300, you can get a lot is the answer in the point-and-shoot market.
And that would be more of your, when people ask what, you know, what lens combo should I take for travel, that would be it.
Well, that's it. And they're boasting a lot of them as, you know, travel, you know, compact travel cameras, basically. These super zooms. And then you look at how small and how light they are. Mm-hmm. It is remarkable.
And I feel like if they wanted to make a really good travel camera, they'd make it look like a piece of garbage.
Right.
That's what I would do. If I was making a travel camera, it'd be a great camera in just the worst looking beat up case. Mm-hmm. So that nobody steals it from you.
Right. And I imagine a $300 camera, I don't think you'd be too concerned about, like, you know, if you dropped it or lost it or, you know, had it taken, it's not a huge investment, right?
Right.
Not in the world of photography anyway.
No, I understand. It's a nice problem to have when you don't really worry too much about the $300, but mid vacation you lose all your pictures, and
that's true. Yeah, that kind of blows.
And now you can't take any pictures, you know, moving forward. Like your father-in-law, didn't he lose? He lost one / maybe two cameras on the subway in Russia.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what happened. But
that's why you're a bad son-in-law.
I'm gonna say that's user error.
No, someone snatched it on the subway.
Yeah, I remember this story loosely, but not well enough to recount it. I mean, you remember it.
Yeah. There, well, Putin was involved.
Right. Or yeah. Poutine, one of them.
Poutine. Probably the, yeah. Poutine. I probably confused the two stories. Did you shoot anything interesting this week?
No, I did. I did not. Did not get around to it since we last podcasted. I probably will this weekend, though. So there's a photo teaser. I'm gonna, when this airs, I'll have already been back. But I'm gonna go to the island and see the cousins and my parents, and sure, there'll be some fun photographs thrown in the mix.
All right.
How about you? Anything interesting this last week?
Interesting. This was selfie week for me.
Selfie week.
Oh yeah, a lot of self portraits this week.
And reason being
baseball. Yeah, we took
so everyone's saying like, "Wait, let's get pictures of Al."
No. But as the team, like, you do promotions and stuff like that for the Bundesliga, and right. You have to promote the team and all this stuff. And so we had to do a team photo first of all.
Okay.
And I'm in the team photo, so that was a treat, having to quickly light and you know, get set up, get all the guys lined up in the with a storm about to hit us, like seconds away. There was this rainstorm coming in.
I saw it. Was you posted on Facebook, right?
I did.
Okay, yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
and so anyway,
it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
It worked out. A couple shadows. I'm not too thrilled.
Yeah,
with.
Yeah. That was my same critique. But
the big tall dude at the back could have stood in the middle. Didn't realize that until after. Like I say, this was all shot in the span of about 5 minutes, and so that's me. I have the remote behind my back. And fire away. So this is a selfie with, you know, like 14 other guys in it. And then the other one that I had to do, we did like profile pictures. So this year I actually made baseball cards for our team.
Back up a second though. How many lights did you use to light this,
this
team photo? So just, you know, in umbrellas sort of crossfiring?
No umbrellas. No. You wouldn't have caught those shadows. No, I needed more power than the umbrellas could, because the umbrellas would have eaten too much flash power.
Okay.
And so it's just two bare flashes cross-lit. So basically, you know, one camera left that's hitting number 55 on the right, and then raking across everybody else, and then one flash on camera right hitting the coach on the left. And so just cross-lighting like that. Now, here's the issue is that to get to the park, I didn't have the car this day. My wife was using it with the kids, and so I basically had to pack my baseball gear and all my photo gear and keep it light enough and compact enough that I could take it on the little Vespa. So I couldn't take what I really would have done differently is I would have taken my large light stands that stick way up, that get really high, and get those lights up nice and high. We would have hopefully avoided those shadows. I had to take the compact ones with me, which meant I couldn't get it up high enough. And plus, I had to keep it as low as low as possible because the strong wind didn't want to blow my lights over, even though I had sandbagged them. It was still pretty bad. So there we go. So not bad. We're still missing one or two players, and so we're going to redo the photo later in the season. But we needed one immediately for the newspaper and the sponsors and stuff like that. So there you go. Everyone thought it was pretty funny, though, me having the wireless remote behind my back firing away.
Tell me number 70 in the front is the Bat Boy.
He's not the Bat Boy, but he's not a player.
He's not a player.
No, he's on the junior team, and he just kind of
I was going to say, he looks like he's 8.
He's older than that. No, I actually asked if he'd be the Bat Boy, but it doesn't really work like that. No, he's on the under something team.
Okay,
17 or something like that. Under 17 team, and he works out with us. Yes, and he's not part of the team. Although the guy at the back, Harold, that is one tall drink of water.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
Because the guy next to him is one tall dude. He eclipses me, and he's eclipsed by that guy. So, anyways.
Great.
And then, so we saw baseball cards. So okay. I went out, and it was kind of challenging, because like what I would have liked to have done is used photos from last year, like guys playing, which I did. A few of the ones I used were guys playing in games last year that I got good shots of, but we haven't played this year. And we have a lot of new guys, and so I had to go out and basically recreate a baseball situation to try to get a good-looking card.
I'm looking at your photo now.
Okay, so you're looking at mine. So I shot everybody else's first. I shot like 14, 15 cards for the other guys. And then they're like, well, here, I'll shoot yours. And I thought, well, I kind of don't want to shoot my own card. Like, I don't want to have my own. I mean, I have to because it's part of the thing. But I found it odd. But so I decided this would be my card. Go.
Okay. It looks very strange.
In what way?
It's the hands. It's the hand positioning. Mm-hmm. Seems like maybe you're posing for a watch advertisement.
Or I'm Oscar.
Or you're Oscar?
The Academy Awards. Doesn't he sit like that, stand like that?
I don't know. Is there a bat underneath your hands? Are you leaning on something?
There's a bat.
Okay, because that's hidden, and it just looks like, oh, hey, check out my wrist.
It's not hidden. You can see it there.
I can hardly make it out. Like, if I look at, I have to really get curious about what the heck is going on there. If I just, if I draw back an inch, I'm like, you're just showing off your wrist. You're like, hey, I'm the wrist guy.
Wrist guy, yeah.
But I don't have a wristband, so it's just a naked wrist.
Now, do not wear wristbands. This is not slow pitch.
Okay, so there's a reference here somewhere. You got to tell us the reference, because
there is. That's the thing is, when it came time to do my own card, I was really. I mean, I wouldn't say reluctant, because I knew I had to do it and be part of it. But what was I going to do? Like, shoot an action selfie? Like that wouldn't make any sense. Especially when you see the other guys' cards, like it makes sense. Like they're all doing something, most of them. And so this one, I thought, okay, I'm gonna basically recreate some sort of a relatively famous or iconic baseball pose. And so who should I do? First of all, it was Will Clark. I thought I'll recreate Will Clark's baseball card because he was he was my favorite player. And then I didn't like any of his cards, and so I didn't do that. And then I went to my other favorite baseball player. I guess that's not the right way to say it, but Ted Williams, who I'm sure you've heard of.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Okay. Number 70 on our team there, he has not heard of Ted Williams. That stung. But anyways, so I thought, I'll kind of redo a Ted Williams. And then didn't really like any of those, and it occurred to me I should go even deeper, make a fictional character. So that's all. So I did a fictional character.
Okay, and are you going to let us know who it is?
Should I let you know, or should people just tell us who it is?
I don't think anybody's going to be able to tell you.
It's Roy Hobbs.
The Natural.
Yeah, I wanted to recreate a fictional baseball card. And this fictional baseball card exists. It was like a, it was, I think it shows up briefly in the movie, and it was done as a promo. And so basically I found Roy Hobbs' card and emulated that. And you're right, it is kind of an odd looking pose, but that's the way it is. That's what it is.
Okay. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen this baseball card that you're speaking of. So but
you have today.
I have today.
Yeah.
I'm going to rewatch the movie because I'm not convinced that it appears anywhere in the movie.
I'm sure it's when he's on deck. I think the picture itself is when he looks up into the stands. No, I'm trying to think of when he first sees Glenn Close. I'm not sure now.
All right. Well, I just need an excuse to watch the movie because I love that movie.
Mm-hmm. In the book. Have you read the book?
No.
It's based on a novel.
Oh, I know. And I just...
Spoiler
it's
alert.
Way too much... Way too much investment.
In the novel?
Yeah.
He strikes out.
No.
True story.
At the end?
No, just in the middle. Yeah, at the end.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm devastated.
Yeah. Don't bother reading the book.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
all right. That's it's the like thing Casey is I play, at the bat.
Yeah, so for me... So for me, it's like, you know, it's probably wishful thinking. I wish I was Roy Hobbs. I'm probably more like Bump Bailey.
Yeah.
So, photo challenge.
Yes.
Wasn't it do a baseball card?
Yeah, you win.
Selfie card?
Yeah.
Do they make selfie sticks for the selfie card?
They probably do.
That would be awesome.
It's a special attachment.
Yeah, like a little mat you shoot through.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. They do that like at Universal Studios. That would be great. That's the thing is back in the day, like you probably paid like $30 to have this done, to have your face on a magazine cover or something like that.
Oh yeah. That was big.
Yeah. So now here you go. Now I'm going to bill myself $30 for this. So photo challenge this week was activity.
Yes.
Why activity? Why? I thought, hey, man, Easter's coming up. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yes.
So here we go. That's why activity. So let's have a look at mine first. I feel like we've been doing yours first a lot.
Well, mine are usually better.
Oh, let's do yours. Okay, here we go. All right. So this is one of the activities I had in mind was Easter eggs.
Yeah.
That's what's happening, right?
Ah, you got it.
Okay, tell me what's going on here.
Easter eggs.
The end. Okay, looking good.
Yeah. Dying Easter eggs. All of the kids were at the table. I just wanted one kid in the shot. I thought it was going to be too busy to have, you know, there's way too much going on with the eggs and the dye and the markers. And I just wanted something that was candid. I didn't want a pose shot. I took a few shots of, you know, the kids holding an egg and smiling, each kid, and that's all fine.
Those are terrible, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they're horrible. It's just there's nothing good about that.
I mean, they do document the fact that your kids were that age and did Easter eggs. That they're done.
Yeah,
job done.
That's
I did the exact same thing and didn't bring it for the, you know, use it for this either. But I thought the same thing. I was like, oh man, these are not good.
Yeah, it just didn't. It's too easy, and it's too much of, you know, I don't know. It's cookie cutter. It's a photo that anybody can take, and everybody has taken. And I don't know that mine would be any better than the one you would take with your phone. So mm-hmm. I just said nope, not doing that. And so then I just kind of, you know, waited in the wings for the kids to kind of forget that I was there, and then I just snapped off a few photos of what I thought would describe the activity. So, you know, I made sure to get as much, you know, that was distracting away from the frame and tried to keep the eggs, the dye, the markers. And clearly you can kind of put the pieces together, what's going on. I liked shooting into the window as opposed to I tried on the other side, but I wasn't going to push the wall away in order to, like, I had an 85mm in the full frame. So if I went on the other side of the table where that white chair is in the back room, I'm only like a foot and a half from my subject. mm-hmm. and the light fall off is really fast. So if I shoot one of the kids at the other end of the table, it's way too dark. So I chose the child that was nearest to the window because I thought that I, you know, had the best use of the light. And I turned off all the lights in the room. So it was, this is the only source of light is this window light. And I just liked it with the way the light was hitting him on his one side of his face. I liked the pose. It's just a nice light. And I really kind of liked the symmetry of the background and the shapes of the windows and the blinds. And one of those photos, I probably snapped 20 photos and it took me about 2.5 seconds to pick out the one that I was going to use.
Mm-hmm. No, it looks really good because I like the natural window light. You got enough light coming, like wrapping around him. You got light hitting him in the back. Yeah. On the back of his shirt, really makes it pop out, and then on his face, and it looks like you're getting some bounce off the egg carton.
Yeah, probably I am. You're right.
Looks like up in the face there, and so
and even on his arm, got a lot of light on it too.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know you have enough a little bit of color there to hint that what you're doing. You can make out the eggs. You don't see them right away. Like mm-hmm. had you posted this picture, you know, in November.
Yeah, you wouldn't know what was going on.
You would. You'd have to take a look and go, oh, okay, this is from a while ago. You'd connect the dots. I mean, like posting it this week, it's automatic. Yeah, of course he's doing Easter eggs.
Yeah.
But no, you'd still figure it out. It would be a little more subtle and all around good photo. Did the family like this?
I haven't shown it to them.
Ooh.
Just told them that, hey, I'm taking a photo challenge. I've used their kids in many photo challenges in the past. Mm-hmm. So I have the blanket support of using whatever I want for the photo challenge because I give them lots of photos and they have lots of them in their house posted on walls. So I basically said, I'm going to try to do a photo challenge here. And I will send them the photo. I'm sure they'll like. I took a few of, like I say, the cutesy ones of just them posing with the eggs. So
right.
But I think they will also appreciate this one.
I think so. All right. Here's my activity. Boom. Go.
Hold on a second because I just lost it. I had it and then I just lost it. So just fill the next 11 seconds while I get it up again.
Do 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 with singing.
Okay, I got it. I got
okay.
it.
Okay, good.
It's interesting that we both chose windows, and we both shot including the windows in our photos this week.
That is an odd coincidence. I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah,
yeah. I was like, I mean, we both use window light, but not often do we include the windows in our photos, and. Yeah, it's a similar type of, not composition, but similar type of lighting for sure.
Total coincidence. Yeah, you're right. I don't, but I was getting ready to shoot. In my head, I thought we were going to shoot bike riding. Like, even though Easter was coming, the weather was getting better, and my daughter's out riding her bike a lot, or not a lot, when we force her to stop, you know, put the video games down. No, but she likes to ride her bike and she's getting better at it. And so I thought, oh, I'll get a shot of her riding her bike. And then the rain came. And right. So it was just hammering. And I thought, oh, wow. I just cleaned out the cellar. And so I know we're going to have light down there. Or a nice night. And I know we're going to have light down there. So I ran outside, grabbed her bike and told her to come and stand by the window and be lamenting that there was no bike riding today.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I want to include the window to show that there's water drops on there.
Mm, I see.
That was definitely part of it. Also, because I like the composition of it. So there you go. That's it. Other than that, it's no lighting at all. It's just all available light.
Is she going to take her dolly for the ride?
She is. That if you look at the front of the bike, that's a dolly bike rack or bike seat.
There you go.
Yeah, because in the very first one I shot, the dolly was in the bike seat, but it didn't register. It just looked odd. So I had her hold a dolly, and also pulls at the heartstrings. Let's be honest.
There you go. Yeah. No, I like it.
Yeah. So really simple to do. Just position her in that little patch of light, so her face is lit, and then it kind of falls off around her. So we have that spotlight effect.
Mm-hmm.
The one nitpick is that I had it all dialed in, ready to go, and just before I snapped this, she found a leaf on her bike and thought, that can't be on the bike. So she threw it on the ground.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's didn't ruin the picture, but
yeah.
So there you go. That's activity. So hopefully we'll ride our bikes tomorrow.
Great.
This week's topic. A couple weeks ago, we did a show about faux medium format.
Right.
You remember it.
Yeah.
So I talked about this little method that I invented,
mm-hmm.
and told everybody about it. And the feedback, I thought the feedback would be nothing. I thought no one would listen. The feedback was immediate. Just to let you know, this guy, Ryan Brennizer, he's done this before. It's called the Brennizer Method. Oh, check this out. And I give Wikipedia links and Ryan Brennizer this, Ryan Brennizer that. So it occurred to me, well, duh, maybe you guys would just rather hear from Ryan Brennizer.
Right.
So here he is. With me is Ryan Brennizer.
Oh, wow, you got that right on the first time. That's impressive.
It's not that impressive. The reason I had no clue how to pronounce it. Mm-hmm. But just by sheer coincidence, I hadn't even looked into it yet. I did see you on the Gulf Photo Plus shootout.
Oh, great.
And they pronounced it, eventually pronounced it correctly.
Yes, Zach liked to tease me about that, but he's too late. I've been teased about my last name my whole life. So
well, I was nervous, so fortunately I saw that ahead of time. So a little background, let's background on who you are. What I did a Google search and checked into a lot of your stuff. There's so much to go into.
I've been busy, and hopefully still will be. So my background originally, you go far enough back, I'm a writer. My original background is in journalism, and I was a newspaper editor. And that parlayed itself into photojournalism. When you are the editor of a small newspaper, you kind of do everything. You do writing, page design, staff management, and photography when that happens. And you tend to, if you're the boss, you tend to get some pretty good assignments. So I covered President Clinton. I covered President Bush for newspapers. And later, with corporate work, I'd done work with President Obama. I moved from newspapers. I got out before they collapsed into university photography. I worked for Columbia University for 4 years, which is, in university photography, you're often doing things that are actually very important or interesting, but in no way look important or interesting. A lot of people speaking at a podium, a lot of people having lunches and things like that. And so as a photographer, basically all you have is learning, nuances of human expression, timing, regarding that, because, you have to somehow produce a magazine worthy image of somebody speaking at a podium. And so it actually was wonderful, wonderful practice for me. Again, anything that just puts you in a position to produce work every day is going to be fantastic practice. And, especially in the wedding industry and in a lot of industries, when people only do their professional work and, you're only doing maybe 15, 20 weddings a year, any job that you have that you actually only do 15 times a year, any skill that you develop that way is not going to develop to its maximum potential. So I had the advantage of being out shooting every day, producing work, being forced to produce work even when I didn't want to, and that's one of the hidden advantages. And then when I started doing weddings, it was like a field day for me because it was like, okay, now we're not, people are not just speaking at a podium. They actually have emotions. They actually, like each other, have chosen to be where they are today. It really was no turning back. I still do corporate work and photojournalism, primarily at this point for corporate entities, but, weddings have taken over my life for most of the past decade. I've now done more than 450 weddings, primarily in the New York City area, but also all around the world, Hong Kong, Singapore, South America, Bahamas, one of the nice benefits of this is that people tend to get married in places and times that they would want to be anyway.
Right.
So yeah, and that is my basic story. There's a lot of nuances and, you know, and things along the way, including, of course, somewhere along the way, I invented a thing that has become the Brennizer method, which I know is sort of what led you to me today here.
Well, that's what we came to talk about a couple of weeks ago on the show. I decided I was going to tell everybody how I invented basically faux medium format photography. And so we did a show about it and explained the method, and then got a lot of feedback saying, no, you didn't invent that. It's the Brennizer method. And here, check this guy out. And so I did. And I have to admit that at the time I hadn't heard of you.
Yeah.
And that's on me. I want to point that out, that I should have been paying attention, because the second that we got these emails, you started popping up everywhere. I couldn't read an article without you showing up in it. Like, for real.
Yeah, I get a lot of Google alerts. We've been busy.
So
first of all, I mean, congratulations, because you did invent it. You did, you know, you did the work. You got the innovation. Maybe some things bled in well, but and that's a lot of the way that things work with invention and innovation. If if you look at most of the things that have come together, like often. A lot of people were working on the the same idea at different times, and some of us just got to the idea at the right place in the right time. But it is good for you that you're clever enough to say, hey, let me try this. This should work.
I think it was for me, it was an accident. It was more out of desperation, because I'm a self admitted prime lens snob. And so at the time, I was quite a while ago when I was walking around with my 40D and my 50mm f1.8, which is long, died. But and I needed to get wider. And I thought, oh boy, I can't back up. Wherever I was, there was a wall there. And so basically I shot, like a 9-image panorama. And that's how it was kind of born. And I use it here and there. And it never occurred to me, because I hadn't really shot medium format at that point. So I never made the connection. And then later on, I did some medium format work and kind of made the connection. So have you shot medium format?
I've definitely shot medium format. I've even, just for personal work occasionally here and there, shot large format. Medium format work, generally, if I'm going to shoot film these days, it will tend to be in a larger format than I can easily or happily get in the digital world. So, back in the days before Nikon had full frame cameras, I would shoot 35mm film just to have that 35mm frame that I love. Mm-hmm. And now, more recently, there are some better options with medium format. Now, but still, actually, if you want the largest, sort of 6-4-5 frame, the easiest way to get that, and other than a $50,000 camera without a crop factor, is film. So I've done some work with House of Blood medium format and things to really bring out the 100mm 2.2 House of Blood lens that is just fantastic. With coming from the world of photojournalism, I made the switch over to digital very, very early. My newspaper closed our darkroom in 2000. So even when we were covering Clinton, I covered them partially in film, but also partially in digital, because we're just we were trying for that immediate turnaround to leave an event and have it on the newsstands 1 hour later. These were in the days where we were shooting. Some of the cameras we were using was shooting to a floppy disk, 640 by 480 pixels. Digital photography as a way of making everyone feel old, because the progress has happened so quickly. I shoot film here and there for the for the larger formats. I'm not medium format digital has, you know, still has some room to grow. It's coming, it's getting better, but for the kind of uses that we do, especially for wedding uses and in low light, you know, if I'm shooting medium format, I'd generally rather be doing some film. But I did have some experience with the frames. I also had, you know, actually a lot of experience just with panoramas in general. And so that's one of the ways in which it kind of clicked for me is I'd been doing a lot of thinking about panoramas and, you know, and sort of what happens when you do that and had a love for shallow depth of field. So, you know, when I was on vacation in Ireland and, you know, I came on this, you know, this cemetery and I said, you know, I had a 70 to 200 on me, and it was, and so it kind of, you know, I kind of said, okay, you know, this frame that I want to do, that I want to shoot is, you know, kind of a, you know, maybe like 20, 30 feet away, kind of, a, you know, a little bit, you know, moderate landscape. And, but the frame is 70, you know, like to capture, these tombstones in the background, like this is, you know, this is a 70 millimeter frame, but, you know, 30 feet or so, 70 millimeters has a pretty deep depth of field. And so that's really not the look that I want. You know, I want to be at 200 for the shallow depth of field, but I have to shoot this at 70 for the frame that I want. And just, you know, I think things kind of lining up in that way, kind of, you know, a light bulb went on over my head, and I was like, wait a second, you know, because I've been shooting panoramas all day anyway, just to, you know, to capture, you know, super wide images, super high resolution images, and I was like, you know, if I do this if I do a panorama of this at 200 millimeters f/2.8, I feel like I can have it both ways. I feel like this should work, just knowing what I know, you know, about math and frames and things like that. But I had no idea, you know, and so I shot a bunch of them, and it wasn't until like 8 hours later, I took it home, you know, fired up, went back to the bed and breakfast, fired up Photoshop, and was probably a very annoying vacation partner because, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, it not only worked, but it was beyond, you know, everything that I had hoped for. And so, yeah, I spent the rest of my vacation, like every night, you know, slaving over Photoshop, you know, probably not the best partner there. But yeah, immediately, you know, I said to myself, you know, okay, I've been around and I have not seen this before. This is kind of interesting, but you know, sort of, you know, ironically, you know, my first thought was like, okay, there are tens of millions of people out there, you know, messing around with cameras. Somebody must, you know, have done this. This must be like anything that you invent, someone somewhere has already done. And I'd been in that experience before, you know, in some other ways. I remember when I was a student in high school, I really loved math, and I think I was a freshman or something. I was just kind of messing around. I was kind of interested in this concept of zero and why you can't divide by zero, uh-huh. And like why it doesn't make sense. It becomes an undeclared number. And I was like, you know what? What happens is, you know, you actually, some really interesting things happen to numbers. Not as you use zero, but as you approach zero. And I started like messing around, and I, you know, started like, this is what happens, you know, when you approach certain numbers. And I actually like came up with notation, you know, to say like, okay, look, as you approach this number, some very interesting things happen mathematically. And so what happened is basically I invented, you know, pre-calculus with notation, with my own notation. And so a year later when I was like, you know, when we opened a calculus book, I was like, huh, okay, yeah. So I invented this, but I was like, you know, 250 years too late, you know. You know, it was only funny that, you know, it's something you can figure out, but the fact that I even had notation for it. So you know, I've been in this experience, and I immediately was like, okay, this has got to be a thing. I just haven't encountered it. So I went on to Flickr, which I had I was, you know, lucky also to have a fairly sizable Flickr following at the time. Like Flickr was very big then, and so I said, okay, here's a large community of photographers. And so what I'm going to do, first of all, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show the photos, And I'm going to kind of explain what's going on here in a kind of a basic way. I didn't want to like show my hand yet, but I wanted to say like, hey, here's an image. I shot it digitally. It is also, you know, it is essentially, let's say a 35 millimeter F, 0.5 image. You know, how did I do it? you know, and I asked, you know, effectively, you know, like 10, 15,000 people collectively saw these photos. And so I knew, I was like, okay, whether or not, either somebody has done it or they know somebody that has done it, someone is going to be able to say, yeah, this is how you did it. And you know, my friends have been doing it for a long time. Because, you know, again, I just figured if somebody else has figured it out, you know, if I figured it out, somebody else has first. And nobody did. They were like, this is really interesting. I haven't seen this before. I was like, okay. I might be onto something here. And again, you know, what I did then, I was like, okay, this is really interesting. And I also, you know, not only is it an interesting trick, but I'm really like liking these images that I'm producing. So let me, again, be an annoying vacation partner and really keep working this. Let me see, before I show everybody what I'm doing, like, I want to own it. Like, I want to know that I can do it inside and out. So what are the different things that I can do? So obviously it's one thing to, you know, when you're doing a panorama, it's most easy to do still life. It's most easy to do things that are not, do not move, do not, my first one was of a cemetery, my second one was of buildings. And I said, well, for a job, I shoot people, I shoot things that do move. So, okay, let me learn to do this with people. Let me learn to do this with, you know, with my partner. Let me learn to do this, with like animals, with, you know, some Irish chicken, some. And you know, I said, okay, let me see. Let me learn to do this with moving action, with candids. Can I do that? And you know, so I photographed a blacksmith in action, and I learned things like, if you're going to do that, you capture all of the action in one frame, you know, and then you know, capture the surrounding things that don't move. You're not going to be able to like panorama half of a person who's in the middle of like a skateboard leap, but you know, your panorama is not really going to work out. And then I said, okay, how can I do this with lighting? How can I do this? Okay, obviously, continuous lighting is going to work best, because, you know, you don't have, the issues that come into play when you're taking 100 shots in a very quick succession with a flash. And I said, okay, but okay, so flash is problematic. How can I do this with flash? And so, you know, I learned, for example, like, you know, if you're going to use flash, you have to, you know, have it on a very, very low, power, because you know, not only then will sometimes it won't go off, or you'll also just probably make your batteries explode if you're doing 100 full power pops in a row, but also just little things like when you're up against the high power of a flash, especially little strobes. Each blast will be a slightly different, even if it does go off in the first place, there'll be a different power, actually a slightly different color temperature. And it's very important for all these frames to be exactly the same. And, you know, I learned things sense of like how to start a panorama and then, you know, have the flash for the first few frames and then just turn it off and continue, with years of experience. But then, so after I had basically worked through these and said like, okay, I think I know this inside and out. I've been showing people, no one, you know, I'm sure somewhere someone has done it before. But now, like, I think I really, you know, I've spent a couple weeks really like working on this, practicing it. I think I can, you know, show people like how to do it effectively. And I think I know the ins and outs of it to kind of make it a system. And so I'm always very big on sharing. Like, you know, if I have a trick or something I've learned, like I wanna share it and you know, just be part of the photographic community. And so that's when I said, okay, guys, you know, this work that I've been producing, this is how it's done. This is the panorama. Still thinking that like then people would kind of say, you know, the same thing that happened with you last week, like, oh yeah, that's a thing. That's, you know, you just haven't really, you know, encountered it yet. But, you know, really, you know, people were taken aback by it. It, you know, it did seem to be something new. And, yeah, and here and there, you know, I was right. Like, out of tens of millions of people here and there, there had been people before who had kind of like, oh, yeah, I stumbled into it, had figured out, if I put a few photos together, this is what happens. Because it is really, it's a question of pretty, not simple math, but it's just a math problem. And so I know, like, there are people better than math at me out there. People are going to figure this out. But it hadn't really been done in any kind of systematized way. And nobody had really, like, worked at what the potential for it was, and really put it out there and shared it. And so I was having just a lot of fun with it and showing it. And then, I think I originally, when I was hiding it, I just called it like my strange magical lenses. Then a bokeh panorama. And then people started calling it the Renizer method. And I was like, oh, that's fun. I've been teased about my last name the whole life, so I kind of like the irony that now everyone has to stumble across, try and say my last name and stumble across it. It's not bad for business. So I was like, okay, Brenizer method. Let's go with that. It's also then funny for, you can imagine how my brother and sister and things like that feel about it, all the other Brenizers.
Oh, right, yeah, sure.
It's been amazing to see. It took really like, a year or 6 months before it really started taking off. But to see now, like if you do a search for it on Twitter, like so many of the results are just not in English. Like people around the world, are doing it or are enjoying it. And because it is something that is optical, it's hard to do. So there's a lot of, it's very easy to produce, or it's hard to produce a great image with it. It's hard to produce a great frame because, you can't see the whole frame at once. And of course, it takes time to do. So it's very, very hard to shoot action, very hard to shoot close. So a lot of people are just kind of like working with the technique, but not producing, great imagery. But, the thing is, like, you can, it's, because it's just an optical thing, like any other, it's like picking up a non-existent f0.5 lens or basically like a medium or large format, it is something that can just, doesn't have to be just a fad, right? Like you can produce compelling imagery with it. And so it's really been great to just watch it grow slowly and then watch people do things with it that I hadn't even considered. So people started doing Brenizer method self-portraits. And I'm not much of a selfie guy. So I actually had never even used a tripod with this other than until about 2 years ago. So I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. It's really great to see when people take things that you do and build on them with their own experience. I've run into people, who've had the same experience that you did before. I actually, while I was in Dubai, one of the other contestants on the shootout was Joel Grimes. And so he had that same thing at a workshop. Somebody, came up to him and he's like, hey, this is really interesting. What happens when I do a panorama with wide open images? Of course, again, this was just like a year or two ago, so he was 6 years too late. I had that same experience again, and the more people that do panoramas, the more that it becomes easier. Like now, the next version of Lightroom, I can't talk about, but they say there's things going to be happening with panoramas, and that more people will be doing panoramas, more and more people will stumble into it. I was just lucky that I guess I've been doing enough of it early on and kind of got into it at a time where it was the right time, where things worked out well. There was a community forming, around Flickr, around Web 2.0 stuff, where people would share techniques, where things could go viral, and we had the right kind of software to pretty easily do panoramas, and it's gotten even better since then.
I was hesitant to share it on the show a couple of weeks ago because I thought, is this just a gimmick? That's what I thought. Then I thought, well, no, I really like it. So even if people think it's a gimmick, it's okay. I'm confident that it's something cool. Mm-hmm. And I think Adam, the guy I host the show with, who he is a photographer now. He wasn't when we started the show. He's a physiotherapist. But I think he thought it was a little gimmicky and couldn't figure out why you'd bother.
Yeah.
And then we see really good images and think that's why.
Right.
That's why
exactly.
You do it.
Yeah, it's just a way of doing something that is, if not impossible, extraordinarily annoying. You know, you can kind of produce, you know, similar images. Again, if you go out, you buy a 4x5 speed graphic, you put like an old spy plane lens on it, you know, and
something that Kubrick has.
Exactly. And so, but yeah, we can't all do that. And even if we can, we don't want to bring that around with us everywhere. You know, so to be able to say, like, you know, not only like this is a, you know, a medium format frame, but this is what would happen if you put an 85-1.4 on a medium format camera. And you can imagine an 85-1.4 on a that would fit like a 6x6 camera, you'd have to carry it around in a wheelbarrow. It would
right.
be incredibly, you know, crazy and heavy, if it's even, you know, possible. So to have all these other advantages, it's been you know, just it gives you something that you can't do otherwise, which makes it you know, have more potential than just a gimmick. You can also if the only thing going for a photo is the trick, then you know, and the photo is not actually a well composed photo or an interesting photo, that's just a gimmick, and there's you know, not you know, lasting interest to it. But if you can combine that, if you said like, look, I'm doing this trick for a particular reason, that really, you know, makes the photo better, and it has the potential to do that for some photos, and that's like anything else, you know, in a certain way, you know, even just the shooting at f1.4 in the first place is, you know, is you know, kind of a trick or a gimmick. It does something with a you know, a certain you know, it gives a certain look to an image. Hardcore photojournalists will even say things like, even just turning your camera vertically, you know, to them is a gimmick. You know, so everyone has different takes on this. Certainly things like, you know, fisheye, HDR, things like that. Like they can be used in a gimmicky way, or you can approach and say, okay, I'm doing this for a particular reason that's going to be very useful for achieving the kind of look that I want for this photo.
So when you approach something like this, do you have a general ballpark of number of images that you're going to use?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that's very important for people that are just starting out with this is it doesn't have to be a large amount of images. So if you want to say, you know, you were shooting with a 4D, if you wanted to basically take a, you know, a 5D, you know, full frame style image with a camera like that, like you only need like three or four images to mathematically achieve that, and you know, and you can go, you know, then you can go full frame to a 6x6 you know, 4x5 frame, again with like 6 images, and certainly not, you know, you can do 9 images with a high level of overlap. So you can actually achieve a lot without too much. But I, you know, usually when I'm on a job, I'll try to do something just like crazy, knowing also that among other things, I can crop the heck out of these images. So I'll always just shoot it a little bit more around the edges. Maybe there's 30 images that make the frame that I really want. And I'm like, okay, and let me shoot another 15 just to give me some cropping room, give me some space. And you know, maybe things are happening that I'm not, you know, seeing at the moment here. But you know, when you're starting with a 300 megapixel image, you can crop.
Right.
You can crop the heck out of it. So for me, it's not as much about the number of images, but it's very important when doing this to get a sense of your frame. It's kind of like doing a puzzle. You want to know where your corners and your edges are, and then you want to just, you know, fill in the rest. You know, otherwise, you know, psychologically, you'll tend to just shoot the interesting stuff. You know, you'll shoot the foliage, but not the open sky. And you know, and then you have a frame that is not rectangular at all. And so, unfortunately, you have to crop away a huge chunk of it. So it's really just about the shape of the frame.
And you have a favorite lens that you use for this?
Yeah, it really works well with any wide, fast lens. Sort of the default lens, wide, fast, and telephoto helps. Because, you know, with a 50 even, again, because it's a panorama, you're making the images wider. And even with a 50, things get very wide very fast. And that kind of wideness can create a lot of perspective distortion that can do weird things in a panorama. So even with a 50, you probably want to do, like, a small number of frames. So for me, a good balance, given that I'm tending to shoot people, is often something like a fast 85. I use an 85-1.4. A Canon 85-1.2 is wonderful for this, because it's already such a crazy depth of field. And that's because, with an 85, if I want to be perfectly safe, I want to have something that I know works, I can fit entire couple's full body into one frame, and that'll always give me a layer that I can come back to, put that layer on, make sure that I'm not, getting some kind of panorama error in the middle of somebody's face, and I don't have to do too many frames to produce a nice wide image, but it also has an incredibly shallow depth of field. You can do even crazier ones. The more telephoto you go, so you actually get more of an effect even with a 200-2.8 than you will with an 85-1.4. I've done them with a 200-f2, and it's completely crazy. But you have to do a lot more frames, so it's a little bit more annoying. And also, when you're shooting moving subjects, when you're shooting people, it's more dangerous because, people will accept some kind of panorama error off in the background on a railing somewhere.
Right.
They're not going to be so happy with a panorama error on their face, making them look like a Picasso. So,
especially if that error is in one of the really out of focus areas in the bokeh.
Yeah, exactly.
You can get away with it. But I shot one of my daughter last week for the show, and I really wanted to push it. So it was really close up shot. I shot with an 85mm lens and ended up shooting 35 images, but could only get her face.
Yeah.
In one shot. And I figured, okay, well, if her toque is a little bit, sorry, her beanie, we call it toque in Canada.
Yeah, I was actually born like 15 miles from Canada, so I picked up some of the lingo.
Ah, okay. And so I figured if her toque is a little bit out, that's okay, we can accept that. But we managed to get the eyes and the face all in one. And she actually held still for the few seconds that I could wow. snap away. But now, if people want to find out more, I did see that you had a video series or a video on your website.
Yeah, I have a video that's basically the length of a video series. After years of people, explaining this and I'd done some free explanatory things, but they were run by other agencies like camera stores. And I was like, I really know this inside and out. I want to just go in and like teach everything, produce something that you can walk in knowing nothing about it and walk out ready to do it, any style. So a couple years ago, a year and a half ago, we finally produced what we call the Ultimate Guide to the Brennheiser Method, and it is truly ultimate. It is something like 2 hours and 45 minutes long, which I don't expect people to just like sit down and have to watch straight way through. But the nice thing about it is, you buy it, you can come back to it at any point. It's divided up into sections. You probably you watch the intro once, you never have to watch it again. But you might go back and say, oh, now maybe I want to watch the post production part while I'm doing the post production. Make sure that it all goes through. But it takes you everything from the shooting, things like lens choice, into various post production options. How to output them and then how to stick them back together. And that is just on it's just Brennheiser Method, Brennizer, at vhx.tv.
We'll put a link up for that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's been great. We're actually we're also finishing editing on a second video that's going to be up at the same site. We finished principal photography for it. We're almost at the anniversary, almost exactly a year ago, but we had a very busy year, and so it's actually going to be, you know, even a little bit of a different, slightly different topic, but, you know, builds on that with some lighting composites and even better production values. And only a year delayed, so because we've had a really good response to this, and it's been really fun. And also the thing is about this, the video is really cheap. It's $10. I said I want to produce something, and in this world, like, I want people, you know, around the world, even if they're, you know, in rural India or something, to be able to purchase this, be able to, like, make it their own. We just want a little to cover our production, and time invested. But, like, it really excites me to watch people, like, go out and do this and then build on it with their own style of photography. To see, like, George Clooney has been shot with the Brennheiser method, you know, and it's very cool to see this, like, kind of spread out into the world. So that's what we wanted to do.
Fantastic. See, my background is in video. I went to film school, and that's where I got the start. So I'm going to try to develop the Brennheiser method for HDSLR video.
I would be really fascinated to see how that would even work. You could modify, like, a matrix bullet time processing thing. If you had nine cameras slightly offset at the same time and same way, go for it.
I'll shoot some IMAX with a couple of T2Is. We'll see.
Yeah, hope you have the budget.
We'll see how that goes. Sure. Yeah. Well, once again, thanks for coming on and telling us all about the method.
Yeah, excellent. Well, yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. And it was great to talk to you. And absolutely. You know, good work, and it was a pleasure.
And we're back. What did you think of that, Adam?
It was awesome.
It was awesome. You haven't heard it yet.
But did you hear me sell that, though?
Yeah, it was really good. That was WWF wrestling good.
Yeah.
WWE.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Come on, seriously.
No, that was I was first of all, I was thrilled that he would be on the show, and then to come and really give us a great interview like that. So definitely check out the video he talked about. You can go check it out. We'll post the link online. And want to say here's the thing is that there's so much this interview, I think it ends up running like 32 minutes or something like that. 28 minutes. Whatever it is, it could have gone on for a couple of hours. I just didn't want to monopolize the guy's time. He's a very busy guy, and fascinating. Just fascinating.
You monopolize my time all the time.
Not that fascinating, not very busy.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Really cutting into your standing around time.
Great.
Thanks again, Ryan. Next week's challenge.
You have one.
I'm assuming it's going to be Easter something.
Okay.
Even though you just did it, you technically just did your own.
Yes.
Well,
I
this
can always
gonna
do
be,
another one.
Yeah, I'm teeing it right up for you. So Easter, this week's challenge is Easter.
Okay.
That's it.
Great.
Ooh, websites!
Mine first?
Yeah, always do yours first.
Okay. AdamSchwartz.ca. And I still haven't posted pictures from our trip to Portland, but I'm going to do that too. So hopefully by the time this airs, there'll be some Facebook photos. So check out Two Hosers Facebook, and I'll post a few pictures from Portland that I took.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, you are.
Yeah, I'm going to post your pictures of Portland on my site as well at alanatridge.com, and we'll post even more of them at twohosers.com.
Great.
Where you can find out everything you want to know about what we just talked about. Pictures, links, that stuff. That's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.